and welcome to From Soup to Nuts on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. This radio show spotlights the nation's top chefs, restaurateurs, and hoteliers. We ask them, how hard is it to run a restaurant? What keeps a chef coming back to the kitchen day after day? How hard is it to manage a hotel? And would you do it if you could? What would these folks do if they could do anything else? Would it be to stay in the hotel and restaurant business? To keep the show really tasty, in each episode, we ask the interviewer to turn the tables on the interviewee and interview their favorite chef, restaurateur, or hotelier for the next episode. I'm Hope Gibbs, founder of Incandescent Public Relations, publisher of Be Incandescent Magazine, and creator of the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. We are here today with our first episode of the new show, From Soup to Nuts, Inside the Kitchen with Chefs, Restaurateurs, and Hoteliers. I'm very excited that our first guests are Dan and Lindsay Michelle, owners of Taqueria El Poblano, one of three restaurants in Northern Virginia. And we are going to let them talk about the location of each of them, what inspired them to get into the restaurant business. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
So let's just give a little background. Back in 1997, Taqueria was founded by Chef Glenn Adams, who landed in D.C., the latest stop in a career that led him through the States and Europe. By 1999, the California native was eager to showcase the food he grew up with in L.A., from the taco trucks of his youth to the regional Mexican specialties he tasted during his travels, Glenn developed a menu to showcase his favorites. Duck tacos, frijoles, and steak. I'm not going to get this right. Steak.
Carbone.
Okay. Yeah, carbone. So tell us about your experience in the restaurant business. What made you guys want to get into it? Your backgrounds individually and together. And we'll start with you, Dan.
Yes. Well, Glenn and I worked together in the hotel business. He was a chef de cuisine, and I was a pastry chef. And we became good friends as we worked together in that venue. And he broke off and started to open up a taqueria, something he'd always dreamed of, and something that he grew up with in California, and just saw nothing of the sort here not only Northern Virginia, but also on the East Coast. So he started that about 13 years ago down in Alexandria, and I helped him not as a partner, as a business partner, just as a friend, painting and gutting the place and carpentry and that kind of thing. And so it took off really well right out of the gate. And 3 years later, he called me up and wanted to know if I'd be interested in branching out and helping him open up a second location. And that's when I left my career as a hotel pastry chef and went into the taqueria business.
So from pastry chef to tacos, was that a big leap? And tell us a little bit also about your background. Where were you working and where did you go to school and how did you go from pastries to tacos?
Just very, very briefly, I was a pre-vet major at University of Tennessee. Became a junior there and decided that wasn't for me. Had always worked to help pay my way through college in cooking and in restaurants and hotels, and decided that I wanted to go to the Culinary Institute of America up in Hyde Park, New York. Did that and then got out of there and then found that pastry was my thing, baking and pastry, and served 22 years as a pastry chef, working various places, Hawaii, a lot in and around D.C. and then getting into making the transition from pastry chef to running a restaurant was huge. I mean, it was like a complete career change. I had no idea how different the two would be. You know, I mean, the only similarity is the food business.
And Lindsay, tell us about your background. You also have pastry chef experience.
Well, that came late in my life after college and doing some finance stuff. And when Dan and I got married and moved to Hawaii, it wasn't much for me to do there. So he got me into a course back here with Roland Mesnier, the White House pastry chef, because Dan and I thought that one day we would open our own pastry shop. after we realized that would be 8 days a week. And then I got pregnant and stuck with what we were doing. And Dan stayed a pastry chef, and I transitioned into doing wedding cakes for a lot of the hotels in D.C. for about 15 years. And so then when the kids were grown, much more grown up, and Glenn came along with this idea, we thought, what the heck? Let's do something really fun together. And Taqueria was born. Second Taqueria was born.
And that's where we're sitting today. And this Taqueria is, what is the address?
2503 Harrison Street in North Arlington.
And it's very popular with local families. Friday night, you can't barely get a seat in here. I think people wait for that.
Yeah, we've been very, very fortunate. Lots of families, lots of couples, all ages.
And then you opened Top 3 when was that?
May
Seven
of
ago,
2012 on Columbia Pike in South Arlington in a neighborhood that's transitioning. And it's also going to be a lot of fun as it grows.
Is that part of the secret to your success? You pick locations based on the population and what you project to be a good population?
I wish I could say it was more, it was scientific. It was kind of like, we looked for almost, we looked for 2 or 3 years. Not intensely, but just kind of always kind of keeping an ear to the ground. And
for a growing neighborhood.
Yeah, like, yeah. And so, you know, we didn't do any, you know, surveys or, you know, hire any you know, companies that do demographic studies or anything. We just kind of got a feeling for the place and just felt like that was a, you know, that a place that was really transitioning and was going to be a hot spot, and we sure hope it will be.
So we will see. And part of the Soup to Nuts model is that I start off the interviews, and then we ask you guys to interview the next person, the next restaurateur and chef. So we're excited to see who you'll pick. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about the founding of the Taqueria. So it was actually two couples that founded it, the two of you and Glenn and his wife Karen, who actually passed away a few years after you opened the Taq 2. So that must have been pretty traumatic. Do you want to talk a little bit about that experience? Clearly you're a close family, and how the two couples worked together and how you're handling being three people running this corporation.
Well, you know, Glenn was the chef, and Karen was actually a pharmacist, and so she continued her pharmacy career, but she became more and more involved in the opening of the first restaurant, and she actually was, you know, she had an amazing attention to detail, you know, as you might think a pharmacist would be, and. And it translated pretty well into running the minutia of a restaurant.
She was the one who taught us all the accounting practices.
Yeah,
and how to,
yeah.
How to keep
she
right.
She
was the one on top of that.
She ran the number side, the business side. She figured out the insurance, the attorneys, all that kind of stuff. Glenn was just the creative chef side of it. And so when we, you know, 3 years later, when we did this one, you know, it just translated that way. Glenn, you know, kind of worked with me in the back of the house, and Karen worked with Lindsay on the front of the house and dealing with all of the accountants and the, you know, attorneys and all the stuff that you need to know to actually run a business. So it worked out well, and you know, she was quite a powerhouse.
Yeah, well, I'm sure her loss is pretty intense, but it's been a few years now. So tell us about how you're running the front of the house. What does that look like?
I guess I do handle most of that with the hiring of the, I call them the taco kids. We have a lot of taco kids in the front of the house from the neighborhood, kids who have grown up coming to the restaurant and then transition into becoming our hosts and our busser runners. And if they stay with us long enough, they become servers and love making kind of money you can make in a restaurant is a big deal to these kids. I don't handle the kitchen hiring. Dan does that. I'm more about the scheduling and training in the dining room. And
yeah, that's great. You know, that is one thing that I find remarkable about you and this restaurant. My daughter is actually
one of your hostesses.
Yes.
And that's how we got to get to know Lindsay and Dan. And it blew me away how you take these kids under your wing and really groom them. I remember coming in after Anna got the job and sitting at the bar and talking to the bartender. And he said he'd been here since he was in high school and through college, and he had grown up through it. And you really take these kids under their wing. And I would have to say that learning the restaurant business is the best education that these kids can get as to prepare them for their future. So tell us a little bit about that program, why you think that's good and how it's worked and where you've had some slip-ups and challenges.
Well, it has been good because we do become a family here with the kids that fit, and we usually can figure out a way to make a kid fit if he or she wants the job. They start out not knowing much of anything about how to take on responsibility, how to be reliable, how to be fast at their job when they need to be, and how to take good care of each other. And so often it becomes a kid has their, looks like a deer in the headlights, and then they start to make friends and become part of the family, and everybody does reach out to help each other and support each other, which is a big deal when you need a special night off to go out with your girlfriends, say, and you need to ask somebody the favor of covering your shift on a Friday, and they don't want to either. And we find that most of the times they take good care of each other and know how to achieve that balance that is difficult in life anyway.
For a lot of the kids, it's their very, very first job.
This is a good place for
right.
their first
and,
job.
And so, you know, they really have to learn how to have a job, you know, which means showing up when you're supposed to show up and, you know, negotiating all that. And
but we're pretty tender with them because we recognize that it's their first job. We recognize it's their first job. We tell them what we expect, and then when they fall down, we give them a few chances, and then if they really aren't made for this business, we release them gently.
We release them to the industry.
Or something.
How
many employees do you have, and how many kids do you think you've trained since?
Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, on the average, we have about, I'd say there's 33, roughly 33 checks that I cut every 2 weeks.
For all three talks?
No.
Oh, just
for this
three
one.
Employees.
But,
many of them are part-time.
Yeah, but many of them are part-time. Some may even have just one shift, mm-hmm. you know. So, and I'd say full-time, you know, it's mostly the kitchen, obviously. I'd say full-time, it's about, help me out here, 14, 15?
Yeah, or, 10 or 12 maybe.
Oh, okay.
And in the front of the house, bussers, servers, bartenders. How many have we had go through here? Because most people that fit here stay until they can't anymore, which means they've gone to college or they're moving or they're getting married, or it's just time to move past restaurant work. But I bet we've easily had, I don't know, 75, 100 kids come
many
through
dozens.
Just because of the transitions kids make. So
awesome.
The ones that are here for 5, 6, 7 years, it's very special, and we have quite a few of those.
And it's nice is that they, you know, they've gone to college, gotten other careers, gotten married, and anytime they come back, they always come back to mm-hmm. Taqueria to see how we're doing. I always find that very flattering, and, you know, it's very warm.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I think your customers feel the same way. That's why their lines out the door.
Well,
the customers do like the familiarity of people
absolutely.
Staying here who know what they like and know who they are, and it's part of that whole family feel. It's not just employee to employee. It is employee to customer and customer to customer because they recognize people from the neighborhood. So it's very warm and fuzzy.
So talk a little bit about the restaurant business. And is that a key to the success of a restaurant, is creating that kind of cheers atmosphere?
I think it certainly helped this restaurant. I know there are plenty of restaurants that don't do that. I think it is part of the charm of here. The food is very, very good, you know, when it's fresh and made from scratch and there are good recipes. That's obviously important. And then you add it to the atmosphere of the place, it just really works.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, it again, we go back to location. You know, in this location, you know, this is not a lunch location like, you know, like down around
Clarendon
and that kind of thing. So we're a family, you know, dinner kind of place, you know, and so we get a lot of neighborhood you know, people coming in with young families. And so, so that for us is, the whole thing of having familiarity and knowing people and getting to know people, it is huge. Other restaurants, they don't need that to survive. You know, they can just have a product and people come and go, and that's fine. That's what worked for us here.
So what's the difference in the atmosphere between the three taquerias, if this is super family-focused?
I would say Taq 1, which is in Alexandria, it's a much more bohemian.
Mm-hmm. In Del Rey, is that
in
right?
In Del Rey, yeah. It's much more bohemian. It's a much smaller place.
But definitely a major neighborhood.
It's a neighborhood joint.
Spot,
oh, absolutely.
That everybody loves.
They don't have a lot of kids. They don't have room for a lot of kids and strollers down there. You know, so it's more bohemian. It's a much, more partying crowd, maybe a little bit younger. As we've already said, it's a neighborhood place for families. The second wave may be a little more single. I say second wave later in the evening. Columbia Pike, the jury's still out. It's so new. It's turning into be, more of a, there's a lot more singles around there, So we are open later hours, I think it's maybe more of a bar crowd, mm-hmm. not as many families yet. I mean, the jury's out on that.
Yeah. Fascinating. So talk about, is it stressful to run a business together? We've in this issue of the magazine, the February issue is our power couples issue. And we've talked to a lot of couples that work together and couples that are at the top of their game and they don't work together, but they're still having powerful careers. So tell us, a restaurant is a stressful industry just from go. Add that to a marriage, and you guys have been married for 29 years.
Yeah, almost.
It's pretty amazing. So.
Well, for us, I think we both have found that sharing this job has actually made it easier because we can carry each other's stress and share the stress and talk about the stress and then enjoy the good. And I know for me, my life got even better when we started doing it together. We have more time together. Obviously, we share those interests plus the rest of our life interests. But I think it's true that not every couple can do this kind of thing because so much of our life is focused on the restaurant, that you have to be good friends to be able to weather that. And you have to respect what each other does within the parameters of the restaurant. We have different roles, and we do respect each other's roles and each other's boundaries, and then try to work out the difficulties together. One of the things I like best is if one of us needs downtime or off time, the other one can fill in and just carry it. And so we have a better life than a lot of people do in restaurants because we can have some downtime. And if you're by yourself, I think a lot of people get eaten up.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. What do you think?
I ditto to all that. I mean, it's the shared responsibility is one thing, and then we have our own little levels of expertise. But just because she's better or I'm better at one thing doesn't mean that the other person can't hold the fort down, mm-hmm. for a little while. And to me, it's nice to get confirmation on. Let's say there's a problem or an issue or a new hire or how we're going to have how it's a disciplinary issue or even a purchasing issue. It's nice to have somebody a sounding board, that's intimately involved with the restaurant. So for me, it's been, you don't feel like an island. You don't feel like you're just out there by yourself. That, I respect her opinion so much on so many things. She may not have the knowledge in the kitchen that I do, but it doesn't mean she doesn't have the common sense or maybe a different perspective coming at it from a different side to say, oh, well, did you think about this? Oh, actually, no, but yeah. That kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So to me, it makes it a lot more sensible. And I have to say that a lot of decisions are made jointly, mm-hmm. which is great,
Yeah. Can you give us an example?
I guess some of the big ones are hiring,
firing,
the tough decisions, the easy ones are easy, those don't require a lot of conversation, it's the harder issues. And a lot of times it could be, if there's an issue, with, problems with employees, a discipline problem, or, you know, there's hassles and this and that. And so we'll kind of team up and get a game plan before we sit down with the meeting with the employees, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that answers it.
No, that definitely answers it. So 29 years, and how did you guys meet?
Let's see. I was living in a shared house with a bunch of chefs who worked at the Jockey Club restaurant in D.C. near Mount Dad.
At Stockbroker.
I was a stockbroker back then.
Oh, wow.
And then I had thought I would eat really well living with all these wonderful chefs who were my friends. Not so. They eat hot dogs when they're home. But Dan came to that restaurant as a pastry chef, and I just happened to be passing through the kitchen one day, and they introduced me to him, and it actually was one of those kind of jarring moments of, I mean, you want to say love at first sight, but it was kind of the heart palpitations, and it was pretty mutual. It was pretty sweet.
And what year was that?
That would have been 81.
Okay.
When we met?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we got married in 84. And it has been a good marriage. We do like each other. It's nice.
And you have kids, go ahead.
And we have two kids.
Yeah.
Two kids who are 24 and 21. And our life is pretty perfect from my viewpoint.
Do you guys miss being pastry chefs?
I do.
You do?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
What kind
I loved it. I miss the hands-on. I miss the artistry of it. I miss the production. I miss the chemistry of it.
The dance
of having the mixers going and stuff in the oven and just everything happening. I'm a producer. I like to produce things. And that was one of the adjustments for me coming into things. I'm not making thing anymore. I'm making things happen, mm-hmm. You know, which was different. So, yes, I miss it. I don't miss the bureaucracy and the politics of being a hotel manager. You know, I hate that.
And the lack of flexibility.
And the lack of flexibility. It would be very hard to go back. Mm. Yeah, even though I do miss aspects of it.
What was your specialty?
Oh, gosh. Well, in the hotel, we did everything. I mean, we baked, you know, all the breakfast stuff, croissants, Danish muffins. I did chocolate work, sugar work.
High-end desserts.
Yeah, high-end desserts. We did real high-end weddings and bar mitzvahs and all that kind of stuff. So it was, you know, I guess if I had to say it was a specialty, it would have been showpieces that you make out of chocolate, sugar, marzipan, all kind of stuff like that. And what distinguished us from other hotels, I think, was that I worked very intimately with clients that, you know, and designed specific plated desserts for their event. Whether it was a corporate event or a social event, you know, we would do tastings and I would work with these people and we would design the dessert. We'd build the dessert, you know, with them. And that's something you can't, a lot of places now buy stuff. They buy so, especially the bakeries, you know, the bread and the breakfast bakeries. You can buy that stuff. You can buy good quality stuff out there, but you can't buy, you know, somebody who's going to custom design a plated dessert for your event.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's what I did a lot. That's what that's part of what I miss.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Do you miss making wedding cakes?
I think that's a no.
I miss decorating wedding cakes and putting them together. But the truth is, I never liked making them. I never liked cleaning up after making them. I liked eating them or eating as I went. But no, I really liked the design and the prettying of the wedding cake.
Well, I have to speak up for him. She was great with working with brides and mothers of brides. You know, and a lot of them, that's a real challenge. You know, I mean, you know, I had the baking skills. She surpassed me in decorating for sure. You know, and so we, again, back then we divided and conquered there too.
Quite
I was,
we did. You would
yeah,
do
I was, I was much faster serious. And more efficient at mixing, baking, slicing, filling, masking. And then I'd turn it over to her and she'd do all the little delicate piping and the decorating. On there, which I could do, but I didn't like it all that much. Well, she was just better at it.
So you had that wedding cake business together while you were working
while I was working at the hotel.
Yeah, and which hotel was that?
It changed names a couple times. It was the Westin, 24th and M Street. It was the Westin, then it was the A&A, and then it was the Monarch, and now it's a Fairmont.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hotel business, that's a whole other discussion.
Oh, another discussion. All right. Yeah.
So tell us, what is your most favorite thing about the restaurant business and your least favorite?
My most favorite is decidedly the employees and the customers. It's just a very people social activity. It's a very people social oriented lifestyle, and I thrive on it.
Mm-hmm.
Least favorite for me, I don't know, it's probably, something you have to do in the back office numbers wise and, just being organized and keeping track of checks and stuff. I mean, it's fine. It's just something you have to do. But that's not the fun part. The fun part is out here in the front of the house.
Yeah.
I'd say for me, and it took me a while to get there, but for me it was, the best is probably our regular customers, and I've made so many friends, so that would be it. The least would be when there's hassles with employees,
mm-hmm.
and we have a lot of Spanish-speaking employees, so there's a cultural divide, there's a cultural, things going on there that I don't negotiate very well, and, dealing with problems on that level is probably my least favorite task.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So last question, what is one bit of advice you would give to other couples that want to work together, and also one bit of advice you would give to restaurateurs about how to be successful?
The working together, I think you have to already know if you're cut out for it, because some couples are, some couples aren't. I think that's something you just know intrinsically of whether that's going to work.
You know pretty quick.
I think you know pretty quick, yeah. As far as restaurant advice?
Oh, well, I mean, I would say on the first part is, I would say have, each person is going to have a strength and a weakness. So play to that, and if you have decided that this person is going to be their realm, then let them do it, and don't, try to bite your tongue.
Right.
Even if you've decided, okay, you're going to be in charge of this, and when they make a decision in that realm, even though you might have an opinion or a disagreement or whatever, if you've decided in advance that's what it is, just go with the flow, let it go, and, compromise, do it their way.
Good advice.
And as far as advice... Gosh, I mean, to other people that are contemplating doing it, there's nothing better than, feeling like, if you think that a partnership is 50-50, you're dead wrong. It's not. It's 100-0 at different times.
Mm-hmm.
So, you give 100% on some things, you take 100% on other things. So you'll think everything has to be, so if you can't do that, then you're going to have problems.
Excellent. Well, I know that the dinner crowd is about to start coming in, so we can't thank you enough for being here. And last question, actually, is it a talk four on the horizon, or? You've been with three.
We'll get back to you on that one.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Good enough. Well, this is the exciting end of our very first episode for Soup to Nuts, and we look forward to seeing who Dan and Lindsay choose to be the next interview for the show.
That's it for today's episode of From Soup to Nuts on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. Who will be the next chef, restaurateur, and hotelier that we interview? Tune in next week for a new episode on www.incandescentradio.com. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.